A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to a bonus episode of Freedom Books, Flowers and the Moon, recorded live at the library in central London earlier this month as part of a series of talks and debates brought to you by the TLS and Book Machine. The subject is literary prizes, how many and what are they good for? And the voices you'll hear are those of our very own Michael Caines and Toby Lichtig, TLS editors both, and our regular contributor Alex Clark, who has judged many a prize in her time. We do hope you enjoy listening.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the library. It's pipe down o'clock. We're here to have a little chat about literary prizes. I'm calling this chat in my head Posh Bingo. That's mainly an act of self-promotion because I'm writing a book about literary prizes called Posh Bingo. My name's Michael Caines. I'm an editor at the Times Literary Supplement, and I am joined tonight by Mr. Toby Lichtig, also on the Times Literary Supplement, who comes to us fresh from chairing the Jewish Quarterly Wingate Prize. And on my right is Alex Clark, who comes to us fresh from... What are you doing? Chairing the Encore Award, among many other things. I think we're about to hear something about that. And I believe running the literature side of the Bath Festival. Is that right,
Alex? You have... Yeah, totally right.
Okay, good. Yeah. And they can say more about themselves. That's part of the reason we are here, to learn more about these two corporate stooges. My friends, Alex and Toby. So what we're going to do is, if you can bear it, we're going to talk for a little bit. We're going to hear about their experiences of judging prizes, talk about prizes more generally, and then I hope that you are all ready to say something absolutely fascinating and really quite pithy about prizes yourself. If you've come here with, a bone to grind or an axe to throw or whatever. Well, I don't know. I'm not a writer, so I don't know. Whatever you do. Okay, so understand we're going to talk for a bit and we're going to do these other things. I must first of all give a couple of house notices. Fire alarm goes off. It's that way. The staff will tell you what to do. Stand still while they get out or something. The hashtag for the event is #TLSBookMachine. I bet you couldn't have guessed that. This event is organised by Book Machine and the TLS. And I think the last thing I need to say is just early notice that on May 16th, there is another event here. It will be chaired by another TLS editor, Thea Leonarduzzi. She'll be talking with people about small presses. It's going to be damn fine. So the first thing I need to say is, I don't really need to say anything. I need to ask the usual things, things that people have been saying since even before there was a Booker Foundation. Are there too many prizes? What's the role? Are they bad for us? They stop you reading the... We've got an answer. We can all go home. Right. All the usual questions, I'm sure, are already in your mind, so therefore I don't need to say too much about them right now. First thing I'm going to do is ask Alex to say something about what she's been doing in Prize World. How did it start for you, Alex? Can you tell us where you are now?
I can't remember the first time I judged a prize. I was really, really excited to be asked to do it. It might have been the Encore Award, which is an award for the best second novel, hence the name, and it is privately endowed, and it has a kind of standing committee, and actually it was a previous fiction editor at the TLS, Lindsay Duguid, who was the first person who ever gave me a job in what we sort of call journalism, the nice end of journalism, who was a judge for many years and the chair of judges for many years, and she asked me to, and I just thought you get masses of free books and lunch and like your and it's
kudos
now, and kudos now. I'm not sure you get that much kudos now. I have to say, fast forward like I don't know a lot of years, too many years, and I'm so over. This isn't nobody's filming or tweeting anything. I'm so over prized this year, like I, because there were things I just couldn't say no to. So I always do the Encore Award. Now entering its kind of sort of final stages of decision making. Mm-hmm. Just been sitting on the kind of sort of like the first meetings for the Orwell Prize. Mm-hmm. Coming up a bit later in the year is the Penn Pinter Prize.
Okay.
and then also the Gordon Byrne Prize, which I could never turn down in a million years because Gordon Byrne is one of my complete heroes, as Toby knows, because I've just written a long piece for him about the state of contemporary fiction, in which there is a sort of possibly quite mad detour for a long way via my love of Gordon Byrne.
That's correct.
Is that any sort of answer?
That sounds like a good answer. So there's been a lot of prizes in your life.
It's all about keeping the piles separate on the floor.
Yeah, but you're
all about that and only that.
Also working at over the same period as a reviewer, in which you get to give your opinion maybe in 300 words, maybe in 3,000 words, or somewhere in between. But this is a slightly different way of judging and talking about those books you wouldn't otherwise read. You are reading for work,
yeah, you
aren't
read
you?
Things that, in fact, the more you read something that's outside your thing. So I mainly review fiction, but when I get asked to do things that involve focusing on books that are also non-fiction, say as the Orwell Prize is, then it's really exciting for me because I don't always...
So does that mean that the process of judging is different then every time?
Yeah, it is. And usually one hopes for a prize like that where there's a certain kind of hybridity to it, then the selection panel is kind of carefully chosen so that people bring sort of different strengths to it. One hopes that that's the case.
And it seems as well that in the case of the Encore Prize, this is a prize with... there was a celebration at the British Library, wasn't there? I think, did you chair that talk? Was that Ian Sinclair and a few other people? Who could talk about the good things that they've done for them at a crucial point in their career?
Despite my notch down, only slight notch down from Gordon Byrne, my hero worship of Ian Sinclair. I thought, I won't be able to ask anything, but I did manage to.
People were threatening to walk home with him at the end of that talk. It's probably quite alarming for him. But
so
that confirmed what you thought about what the Encore Prize is for, that it's a good thing, not necessarily in terms of raising the profile of a writer the way some other prizes might do, but it's a career kind of prize. It helps them even if not...
I actually think it's saying you've written your first novel and whatever, sometimes it's very successful, oftentimes it's not, however good it's been, it's not sold, anyway, it's not translated into sales. You've yet made it through to write a second novel, and here is just someone saying, keep going, and also here is £10,000. And for me, that tax-free. For me,
sorry, say that again, £10,000.
Tax-free. For me, that is actually, it is absolutely about investing in somebody's career.
Yeah. Well, that sounds the best kind of investment. In the Iris Murdoch letters, there's someone where she says she's won that kind of sum, and it's taxed at 83%. She gets nothing really out of
that's
it at all.
It's not really
a prize at all.
That's where I get. But, I think it's that is a real kind of example of something. Of course, I would think that because I'm involved with it. But we'll talk about this, I'm sure, later. When it becomes the prize is just the sort of cultural thing, quite aside, it has a cultural identity quite aside from what's actually happening, is where the problem is.
Right, now that's very good.
We'll go there, I'm sure.
Should we leave that then, where the problem is? Toby, would you now like to tell us a thing or two about what you've been up to?
A thing or two. So I recently judged the J.Q. Wingate Prize, which is the annual Jewish book prize in this country. You get about 75 books, all of allegedly Jewish interest. Some are, some aren't. In a way, it actually makes the process slightly easier because some were so demonstrably not of Jewish interest that you could sort of not necessarily have to read all of them. I've obviously been thinking about this leading up to today, and I tell people it was a great process, and it was to a certain extent, and it was great to be asked, and it's a great honour. It was kind of a slog as well. I think it would be a pointless to pretend it wasn't. And it gives you, certainly for this one, because it's quite a specific one. Although it's specific, there are lots of different sorts of genres. So, there were biographies, there was fiction, but they were all of a certain sort of, Jewish interest. There were lots of books about the Holocaust. There were lots of books about Israel-Palestine. There were lots of books about kooky families. Those were the three main strands. It does give you, I find, a slightly peculiar relationship with literature when you sort of bed down for a few months and you read a whole stack of books, many of which, frankly, aren't very good or to your taste necessarily. You've got to, give them all due consideration. You can't just read 10 pages and think, well, I'm not getting on with this. It's not really fair on anyone. And I enjoyed it for the gems that we discovered, and I was delighted with the prize that we all unanimously agreed on. And actually, it was a sort of boringly unfractious process. We all got on boringly well. No one punched each other. It was all quite pleasant. And we chose this great book called The Mighty Franks by Michael Frank. I would urge everyone to get it and read it. It's about this kooky Jewish family in LA, but it's a lot better than that description. So that was great. But there was a kind of, there were times when I was judging it and I was sort of wondering why I was doing it and to what end, other than the delight of being asked and all of that. And I was sort of talking to the publisher of the book that won afterwards, and I said, do you think this is going to have a huge impact on sales or even a small impact? And he looked at me and laughed and said, well, maybe an extra 40 or 50 copies will be sold. And the author gets a small cash prize. I think it was £3,000, which is obviously not insignificant at all, and that will certainly help him. It was a good process, and we were pleased with the winner. But there was a bit of me that felt a bit sceptical about what it was doing and what it was doing for literature. It certainly wasn't having a negative effect. I just wondered a little bit.
Okay, so those doubts were there as you were undergoing the judging process.
Yes.
Can you tell us anything about the judging in terms of your fellow judges? How did it work for you as chair?
How did it work? So we sat down, we whittled down this long list of 75 submitted books to 12. Again, it was quite a peculiar thing to do, particularly because this prize cuts across genres. We were, comparing this magisterial history of the Holocaust against that 19th century memoir of someone's great-grandfather against that comic novel set in the present day. And I think you've got to take that process with a pinch of salt. And actually, when it came down to the final process, I mentioned the magisterial Holocaust history, Lawrence Rees's book, The Holocaust. It's absolutely brilliant. He does the almost impossible task, accomplishes the almost impossible task of throwing new light on, that most written about of topics and brings in original research. And sort of weighing that against this very peculiar, idiosyncratic memoir, The Mighty Franks, who's really to say what was the better book? In a way, we chose The Mighty Franks because it was slightly less fancied, and also, it's the Jewish Book Prize. You don't want a Holocaust book to win every single year. So there are political considerations to it. Let's not pretend that it's just about judging literary merit. Other things come into it. And we were, I don't know if I'm being impolitic here by saying it, but we were sort of urged at the beginning, choose the book you want. Please let it not be a book about the Holocaust. we could have chosen it. It would have been fine. But anyway, that was the way it happened at the end. The actual judging process, I don't know if it's always like this. It's the first time I've done it. It was actually quite easy. It was quite easy to come to the decision of what the 12 were out of 75. There were maybe five or six other books that could have made it. And when we were whittling down 12 to 6, again, the best books did sort of stand out.
Okay, so that was pretty clear.
That was pretty clear. And I guess the other thing I'd say about the process was I found reading to judge was very, very different from reading books as a critic and very, very different from reading books as a reader. Completely different.
Alex, does that totally chime different. Everything Toby's just said in terms of the process?
It kind of does. Sounds the same? I mean, the awful thing is, for your and this room's purposes, I haven't had any terrible storming out moments in prizes. It's really, they all seem to belong in that kind of heyday of past Booker Prize,
yes,
don't they?
Yes,
and
there's
it's
a
all
bit of
about,
a great myth about it.
Really, and probably they were all made up anyway. Quite possibly,
just to get attention.
For the press release, etc. But it's just...
Well, I've got John Calder right here on a bit of paper. I won't read it out, but saying before the Booker Prize even came along, saying this would be great. Don't worry about who wins. Worry the publicity. That's what really counts.
Yeah.
So scandal's always been there. And I think, as we've heard, people know, scandal about prizes tends not to be the sort of thing that destroys it. It makes it stronger, doesn't it?
Exactly. Saying
that? We were talking about this. So there's that book by James English, it's called That's The Economy of Prestige.
Which won a prize.
Which won a prize. And it's basically about prize culture and how insidious and terrible it is. And then he won a prize, and that's wonderful. And I've actually got a little quote. He says, so there's, the whole round of criticism is an integral part of the prize frenzy itself. If there aren't people coming out saying,
yeah, but useless, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It'd be useless. We need it. It's like the kind of, it's the antithesis to the thesis of the prize or whatever.
So actually, the underlying scandal is that there's no scandal. A lot of judges I've talked to said, I assiduously took notes, I read every book. Somebody told me we sat down to have lunch, already have a fight, we agreed at the beginning, and then we just ate our lunch and had a nice time.
Actually,
it's a really boring kind of bureaucratic process of sorting some books. And as you said, you often know, the really good ones will stand out as a pack. Mm. Choosing a winner is slightly different from choosing a short list. Is that fair, would you say?
Oh, God, long list to short list, they're just like the sunny uplit lands of book loving and appreciation and fine-ish conversation, better before lunch than after lunch. But... The kind of, it's just a sort of slog at the final thing, isn't it? Where you have this sense of kind of responsibility in your hands, but you also know Posh Bingo, etc. By the way, didn't know you were writing a book called Posh Bingo.
Sorry.
And that, well, we need at least like some acknowledgement, reassurance, and like free copies or whatever. This is clearly research.
Absolutely. That's why we're recording this. Anything anyone says going straight in the book. I haven't written it. I just, you know, need you all to send me something.
I haven't had that experience of great contention. It does a lot of it when I judge the Booker Prize. I'm just going to put this out there. Michael Portillo was the chair of judges. You want a politician doing it. They're so good at chairing things. They've done so many boring committees. So boring. And they just know how to say, your turn to speak. Now we're voting. You shut up. Let's go home. Brilliant. Without anyone feeling really put out by it.
Well, by contrast, I know there's this famous story about Joanna Lumley judging the Booker and thinking, describing it as a shark-infested world. Hooray, that's us. But I know an actress judging a prize right now said, never again. Absolutely horrible. Just hated it. Didn't like doing it at all.
You shouldn't say that to me. I would go home and try and get all the prizes and work out who that might possibly be.
Good. Well, you might be able to work that out. I don't know if anyone else will. We'll find out in a moment.
Okay.
But for you, you're going to read hundreds of books this year from what you've just said.
Yeah.
You wouldn't necessarily read otherwise. Is this worth it for you?
I mean, some experiences are more... I mean, I get exactly what Toby's saying. Some experiences are sort of deeper than others, as it were. And certainly you have to face the fact that you'll read books that you don't particularly personally enjoy, books that you don't think are very good, books where you just don't know why they've been submitted for the prize, and probably also see things that you really love just fail to find favour with other things. Now, I don't know about you, Toby, but there's always a point in some or other meeting where someone says, a chair usually says, I think we should all speak to the book now. And I just think, Christ, I'm blathering on now, but basically my mode of talking about books is to write about them. And I just think, could I write a review and send it in? Because that I will argue my case much better. And I'm then converted by other people who are better at oration than me.
Yeah, and sort of so maybe kind of rhetorically better or better on the spot or whatever, which is a very different thing. But then in terms of reading being different, I felt that there are books that I will review and that I will like and I will like to write about because they spark interesting thoughts and take you off in different interesting critical directions that I wouldn't necessarily want to press into the hands of a friend. And I think when it comes to judging a prize, for me anyway, I felt like certainly once you got to the shortlist stage, I wanted to be able to completely recommend any of these books. I don't mean sheer zipping along readability, that awful statement when it was the 2011 Booker Prize or whatever, but I wanted to be able to say, this book is brilliant and it is intellectually engaging and I want everyone to read it. And I don't always feel like that when I'm reviewing things.
If you're not in a prize... Like, I'm just thinking of the Women's Prize for Fiction. Long list has just been announced. I actually think it's quite... There's lots of things I really, really like on it. But I had this outrage that this book by Samantha Harvey, The Western Wind, wasn't on it. And I basically just now think everyone who judged that prize is stupid. So I've kind of got... This has got no legitimacy for me anymore. What are you thinking? You've rejected a complete masterpiece. Idiot.
But then you don't know that maybe two people loved it. Two people were ambivalent.
And
then
I also remember, do you remember a few years ago the Booker Prize, people were outraged because Edward St. Aubyn wasn't on whatever stage of whatever it was. And I really like Edward St. Aubyn. Who doesn't? He's great. But I remember thinking, what is their problem? Get over it. It's not your prize. You weren't judging it. It's not for you. It's not called the blah, blah, a person prize for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you just get into this kind of, you then realise you've got the mindset of the haters.
Yeah, yes, them. I don't know any myself. But it's only ever, I guess you could say, the judgment of a particular set of people at a particular time. But to qualify that in two ways. One is some people are, Alex, serial judges. They're back for more. So you're one of those nice pompous face critic who has influenced taste. You're one of those people, you know, you've judged a lot of prizes. And
I've
especially goes on in poetry world, which is seen, I think, quite widely to be vulnerable to corruption of one sort or another.
I have on occasion judged poetry prizes.
Have you?
And I've literally written back and said, I'm sorry, I think you've got that. I don't know anything about poetry. And they always go, no, that's great. We really need like a person who doesn't know. And then you think, it's awful when you're in the conversation because people are having this kind of, they might as well be talking about, you know, quantum physics. And you're just going,
it becomes quite technical conversation.
Like really technical, really expert. They know everything about it because that's why they've been asked to do it. And you're just the absolute kind of useless idiot sitting in the corner going, it doesn't rhyme or whatever. You know, it's
well,
awful.
Ourselves aside, you said that there's a wider problem. You know, once you get beyond what you're doing as a judge or chair on a particular prize, what exactly do you have in mind? Let's talk about wider problems.
Well, it's a problem in, let's be truthful, let's go right to it. It's the Booker problem, and it's not a problem with the Booker, because the Booker is doing what the Booker has done, and actually it's doing more than the Booker has done, because it has these sort of spin-off prizes that are actually really, really helpful. Mm. But it's the way everyone else regards it, the circus around it, and that has spread to a few other prizes, but not really in any way, because it is the long established, so that when they do the thing with the American writers, you kind of think, God, they're damned if they did and damned if they didn't. And now, like, you know, two Americans have won the prize, and now everyone's going, oh my God, that's it. All English writers literally blacklisted forever, can never write another word. And so you just get this kind of hoopla that is so utterly divorced from the reality of writing and reviewing and thinking about books. And at that point, I think, look, anybody who actually enjoys reading doesn't really want to have anything to do with prizes. Anybody who actually cares about how this is all done and who's what's great to read and how it's going to be in 100 years' time or whatever, this knows this is just hooey. It's just newspaper hooey.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Yeah, and one way it's that when you talk about getting this attention, which John Calder could see in the 60s, and I think the French have seen for him a lot longer than that, is quite a useful thing for book sales. You realise there's not much in the way of book news. You know, I get like the Lit Hub message every day and the bookseller, and there's always prizes in it because in a way it's a nice systematised form of promotion in which you're obviously playing a part.
Yeah, well,
but it becomes this kind of circus. I mean, one thing I think James English maybe gets not necessarily wrong, but needs qualifying, as he talks about scandal, you know, especially Booker controversy, but not just that, scandal in many forms, as helping to establish the brand and the importance of a prize. But nobody I know I've spoken to says, we seek that out now. I think that's partly down to the person, you know, personalities involved, and Martin Goff and whoever, you know, Philip Larkin trying to jump out the window or something, or saying you jump out the window.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone really wants that. Like you say, it's a more serious business for people who are really actually interested in
well,
the
books. We know the kind of bottom line answer, don't we? That it just, a prize doesn't really matter when something is, you know, when there is a very vibrant cultural scene, if there are huge numbers of people reading, for example, literary fiction, then, you know, there are huge numbers of people reading crime novels. And so crime awards are the icing on the cake for people and a way of rewarding people at the peak of their writing careers. They're not make or break for an entire section of the industry.
Yeah. That's a very significant difference, isn't it? One of the first things somebody said to me when I started thinking about the book was, well, what else is there? And in fact, one of the publishers involved in that letter about the boundaries for the book has said more or less the same thing. He said, I think you completely underestimate how little chance we have without this prize mechanism for certain types of fiction.
Can I just say a thing about that? This is a letter that publishers banded together to write to the Booker Foundation to say, sorry, I'm just...
No, absolutely.
I'll get this one.
To say, you know, can you please tell... we don't want the Americans to come in. It was terrible. Like, they're going to go, shit. You're so... you know what, yeah, do you know what, yes, we are not going to have anywhere. It's the most stupid thing I've ever seen in my life. Sorry, publishers who are here, but what were you thinking?
Welcome to Brexit Britain.
Was that not also just to kind of fan the flames of publicity of the whole thing and kind of feed into the thing we talked about earlier?
Let's get Toby talking, because as fiction editor, does this make any difference to you at all at, you know, reviewing and the idea of boundaries?
It shouldn't. I'd be lying if I said it didn't. And, you know, unfortunately, or fortunately, or whatever, the job that I love, totally love, part of that job is to kind of keep an eye on lists like The Booker. And it's, you know, Alex and I have both been invited to talk about The Booker, long list and short list on Front Row, whatever. We accept those invitations. You know, we don't sort of high-mindedly say, no, we think it's all a circus. Or, I don't know, perhaps you've done so. I'm certainly guilty of contributing to that.
Work.
So, you know, you've got to work. Exactly, you know, and it's quite hard to not get sucked into the sort of self-generated excitement of the whole thing. I'm kind of pro, in a way, I'm pro there being as many literary prizes as possible in order to dilute the hegemony of the Booker and to, you know, try and encourage the media to fan the flames of other awards that I think are possibly more interesting, like the Goldsmiths Prize, for example. And, you know, the Encore is also very interesting. So, if we are going to engage in this as critics and as journalists and as readers as well, I kind of want more attention across the board.
Now, I hope that other people are going to jump in and say something quite clearly and loudly so it can be heard across the whole of St. Martin's Lane. But first of all, I'd just say, on the other hand, I mean, we're sort of slightly working towards the problems with prizes, but I think a couple of years ago, Adam Gopnik wrote something saying, prize giving is part of literary culture and competing is part of literary culture. Does that seem right to you that this might... There's a way of seeing it as, this is official culture. This is official culture's awkward way of dealing with the sort of maverick artist or the great work, and this is the best we've got as a community or a group or a country or whatever it is. How do we deal with that? The other way to think about it is actually, it's actually intrinsic to it. It's in the bloodstream. If you write something, people want to show off, all that kind of business. Is there anything in that?
I mean, I do think that. I think it's, I mean, we know that the competition, you know, you can't... A running race is a running race, and it's not a book, and that's different, and we know that. But it's not that I do think there's an intrinsic harm.
You don't.
To books. And I don't think having just... There's not an intrinsic harm to big prizes. There's not an intrinsic harm to the Booker. It's the way things are skewed. So if you say something is part of the literature, well, how much is it dominating everything else that happens?
So it's part... It's not the prize, it's the media. It's not you.
Well, it's also one of the things that... Sorry, this is what I said. Sorry. It's that way that people get very exercised, absolutely understandably and correctly, and I do think this is moving on a bit, when a prize shortlist comes out and it doesn't display diversity in whatever way, mm-hmm. and you think, well, yeah, I completely understand that argument. This is totally the wrong time to be having it. Mm-hmm. At the point where, you know, and I know last year when we judged the Encore Award, we'd had so few submissions, if any, from mm-hmm. writers, or like in tiny, tiny numbers from writers of colour. You can only judge the thing that's put in front of you. So the conversation has to go way back.
Yeah, I completely agree. That we were very conscious when we were doing the Wingate Prize. I think something like 70-75% of the books submitted were by men. That's a problem with the publishing industry. And actually, as it happened, when we came down to our long list and short list, in the end, we chose... It was fairly balanced. It was sort of 6 and 6 and 3 and 3. But that wasn't actually through any great... designs, but absolutely the problem goes far, far further back the chain.
Toby, in your experience, any prize I've ever judged, at the point where you come to pile your long or short list, everyone thinks, okay, what does this list say in terms of gender balance, racial diversity, class diversity, style diversity? And I think that's great that people do that.
Absolutely. And we were completely aware. It was easy with sort of ethnic and diversity because it was all Jewish. But when it came to gender and stuff, you know, we were aware of it. And what would have been interesting would be, so I said it was about 75% skewed male female. Had that long list been 8 men and 4 women. Reflecting what was submitted, I wonder what debate we would have had. As it happened, we didn't need to have that conversation. Absolutely. I think a list does say something.
If you're going to accept that sort of mantle, which I mean is overblown, of taste maker, then you think, well, we've got to use it for some sort of wider kind of benefit than just saying, actually, I like that.
Power is kind of there.
Yeah. No,
and also, you
pretend it's not.
You sort of want, you want stylistic diversity as well. You want, yes, you want the actual kind of literary content to be diverse, because otherwise it sort of doesn't really, it doesn't really do a service to literature as well as to the people who are writing literature.
Yeah.
A good point on which to ask whether everyone has any violently disagreeing, or I mean, a confession of... Has anyone here won a prize?
I was going to ask that.
Not yet, good answer. Yeah,
this man here.
I won a first novel prize, the Writers Club, and I was shortlisted for the Costa. And then I set my own prize up, probably on for that reason, as I actually saw what the uplift was of being... so I think on balance prizes are a good thing, because there are a lot of books published and we need a filtering process to a certain degree, otherwise it's just white noise.
Well, one thing I really like about the Republic of Consciousness Prize, I suppose, is that it's rather explicit and honest about the fact that that prizes are often in the long-term awards for publishers. And this happens to be a prize that favours small publishers, whereas some prizes, just by the system in place, do not. They favour the bigger publishers, publishers who won it before, etc.
And it's about, at least explicitly, about money, in the sense that the prize says, we give our shortlist money, whereas most prizes ask the shortlist to contribute to the marketing budget.
And I actually interviewed Neil yesterday, and it can be crippling for very, very small presses. What did you say? Sort of £3,000 if you're on the Booker?
£5,000.
You know, if you're a small press and you get on the Booker, is that the longlist or shortlist?
The shortlist.
Shortlist. You know, £5,000 is a fortune to a small press, and... You know,
it's also about making sure your print runs are in place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really difficult.
Yeah. But I think one thing I was going to say, just final point. It's interesting, if you look at The Guardian, books are the only thing they don't give five-star reviews for. Art exhibitions, films, TV, all culture is five-star reviews, except books, which is a good thing. But it does tell you something about how we need to... Books somehow are a different entity to other bits of culture in terms of how you say this is good or not good, and prizes in a sense are kind of almost kind of filling that gap.
Yeah, they're doing the five-star job in a way.
Want to get me started on the fact that when they do the Critic of the Year, it's always someone who's told you whether sausages are nice somewhere, and never someone who can write about Ulysses.
I remember actually. Sorry,
saying drives me nuts.
Before anyone else says, Alex, you did write a piece, didn't you, a few years about the Hatchet Job of the Year, and that's the nearest we got to a prize really about critics. What did you say about that? Can you just? That was a big moment, wasn't it?
It just pissed me off so much. I just thought it was so. Like, they weren't even really good, they weren't well-written reviews, and everybody knows it's the easiest thing to write.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can slag something off because everyone's angry, and just they were just so lazy and they were so pleased with themselves, and anyway, that's all I'm going to say.
Okay,
about
so at least
it.
We can say the prize is so positive.
Yeah, yes. It lasted about 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and came to a pretty quick halt after that piece, I can tell you.
The power of the criticism. Has anyone here bought a book on the strength of it winning a prize? One person, two people.
Yes,
three, loads of people. Everyone. Okay, that's good. Sorry, did you have something you wanted to say, Louise?
We've been talking about 70 pounds. I don't know if you're allowed to mention a prize that you wore, but I really wore the Guardian first of all. I think it was amazing, and I would make so many of my buying decisions based on that award. And also, it had short stories, it had poetry, it had novels. It was really
Non-fiction.
And
non-fiction
as well,
exactly.
Which
sounds
really great.
Literature and translation. Sorry, I was just on the last
one. Oh, yeah, that was a marketing
decision.
It was a money decision. No, it was the same thing. Sorry, I'm not contradicting.
And in a way, that's closer to the traditional French model for a prize, isn't it? That it's a boost for one person. It's rather like the end of the school process rather than a beginning of your career of winning prizes.
Awards of that nature. How do you view those?
The bad sets, I think it's sort of become increasingly ridiculous. It sort of was a bit of fun. And then I think the thing that I find most annoying about it, and I'm completely guilty of this because I've written one of these pieces as well, is that kind of annual charade where, you know, you get a critic writing a piece about how it's not really, you know... The way the Bad Sex Award works is you isolate funny scenes, and it's supposed to be about redundant sex scenes, but often they're just, you know, slightly outlandishly described sex scenes. Often they're not even badly described, and they're not necessarily redundant. But then you get a critic coming out saying it's all a load of nonsense, and then everyone just jumps around and, you know, says it's all very funny, and you sort of move on. And I'm not really sure. It doesn't really do much harm, I suppose, but I'm not really sure what purpose it serves to literature.
Do you think it's a bad thing?
I mean, I look at it.
Oh, this looks like a cracker.
But I mean, there is something extraordinarily English about it as well. And I think there was a French critic who sort of said, "Just we wouldn't have this sort of prize in France." The idea that you have to sort of isolate. There is no bad sex in France, and certainly we would not admit to it.
But I was shortlisted for.
Oh, congratulations! And was that an honour? Were you pleased?
I was furious. Absolutely furious.
And then quietly pleased.
No. I remained furious. And I turned up to the event. I was the only person who turned up to the event. And they didn't read, because they read it out. They get accents to read it out.
Yeah, it's the same.
And they didn't read mine out because they essentially said it wasn't funny and it was quite well written. But they were struggling to find... Whatever. So it does feel as the world has slightly moved on from the bad sex.
It was very. I mean, it was sort of naughty when it started.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was also a generational thing because for a long time the party was the party to go to find someone to have sex with. Really, yeah. It was often that
and
might
then write
be
about
bad
it.
Sex. Well, I'm here to tell you it was really about the Literary Review showing off its own kind of raciness by hosting a party at which you might hear naughty words and then there'd be so much drink everyone would cop off.
And it was so it's incredibly crowded you'd sort of accidentally cop off with someone without even realising.
Yeah, you would. You would. It was a real kind of Me Too party, actually. Yeah, totally.
So it's a kind of...
Totally. Yeah, and they're very often not... bad.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Value judgment though that is, but I don't think it is really a viable post Weinstein prize.
Yeah, there's a very, very good point. It'll be in.
I
bet you it'll happen this year. Then it'll be very interesting to see how it's reported and whether it sort of gradually fizzles out. I'd be surprised if they don't run it this December normally. We'll see.
Well, that's the point. I suppose these prizes do, in a way, have the time, don't they? Sometimes one hopes, of course, the Encore will go on forever and the Republic of Conscience prize. But some of them do seem very much tied to the situation. Has anyone else got any other prize things they want to say or questions for Toby? Yes, sorry, at the back. Hello. Shout out what you want to shout out. Alex?
They got the
coffee table arty.
Do you mean like fiction or not fiction?
Oh. Well, there's the Narrativey Library Prize that buy your drink. That's about it. What about any others, Toby?
No, I can't. Sorry.
And that's the other thing. So the logical prizes, they do proliferate. You know, there's the Man Booker. Man Booker wasn't deemed to be shortlisting enough women, so you get the Women's Prize. It's not deemed to be experimental enough, so you get the Goldsmiths Prize. It's not deemed to be sporting small presses. You get them. So these things do. So I just bide your time, and one will turn up eventually.
Oh, God, one will certainly
one will
turn
certainly
up.
Be up.
Turn up.
There's a statistic. I think am I right in saying there are over 1,000 literary prizes in the US and UK combined?
In 1961, there were 451 prizes in France alone. There were 111 in Germany. What people were moaning about in Britain was there wasn't the equivalent of the Goncourt and the Féminin and all that kind of thing. They didn't have that culture. So all we did was really import something. If you go back 100 years, there's people in Britain saying, "Thank God we're not like those French. We don't treat it like some vulgar competition."
Are you writing about it across...
Can I ask you a question?
I'm just intrigued by this. It's going to sound really, I don't know, chauvinistic, I suppose.
Uh-oh.
Nationalist.
Great.
In a really, like, I'm going to cast aspersions on another country, is what I'm going to say. You know the Australian one, mm-hmm. the Miles Franklin. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever they say on the back of a book, so-and-so's won the Miles Franklin, they've always won it about 10 times.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know this a little bit from interviewing Australian writers, but it's like they're just passing it around, the same people.
Hang on a minute. Australia, New
Zealand. I didn't say New Zealand.
Well, in that sense, though, isn't it a bit like Poetry World, where it's quite small? You know, there's a big five of poetry publishers, aren't they? Aren't there? And they tend to win 80% yeah. of the prizes. I mean, that's the latest count from a couple of years ago. You put them along with the next two or three poetry publishers, they get it all. They seem to pass it around. Oh, look, so-and-so won it 3 years ago, now they're a judge. It's one of those things where you kind of go, it is a small world.
It is the sort of Paul problem, isn't it? And in which case, I kind of think, mm-hmm. if you're a very distinguished novelist, perhaps with brilliant international sales, mm-hmm. you might rule yourself out of it 1 year, don't you think?
Yeah, I think there's interesting case to be made here for Refuseniks, who I really cherish. But there was oh, yeah, did you yeah, have yeah. something you wanted to say? Sorry, I'm conscious of rejecting people.
I mean, I probably know the answer to this, and I'm not a self-published author, for the record. But can you see a time where literary prizes might be overrated? Especially given how much more close to this publishing is becoming to literary work.
For sure.
Great. Sorry. Actually, no.
I think it would be impossible for that not to be the case. Yeah. And I think one of the reasons that there's, even now, and I've talked about it in various places, that there's any resistance to it, is just how would you manage
it's the just volume? Yeah, it's volume.
It would
yeah.
be a volume issue. Yeah. It's not that anyone thinks you could not find a self-published book that would not end up on a long list or a short list or winning a prize. Yeah. I don't think anybody
certainly editorially, you know, on a paper, the first thought is maybe suspicion. You know, what is this kind of not necessarily very well put together object? But that you shouldn't completely just rule it out of hand, should you? Of course not. Prizes. No. The conscious that there comes a point where people really ought to just mingle or talk amongst themselves or sob gently in a corner. But has anyone else got anything else they're burning? They're burning to say. Over here. Why do you think there's so few prizes, Toby, for literature in translation?
Because this country's completely useless, and we voted Brexit. I mean, yes. I'm afraid that's your answer. We've got a little bit better, a tiny bit better, but I mean, yeah. What's the percentage of translated works as opposed to Anglophone works in this country? Is it 4%, something like that? 4.5%? There you go.
Toby, why do you hate Britain so much?
For example, something like when a big organisation like the Booker Foundation announces the Man Booker International, but not only does that makes it a prize that is shared between writer and translator, which is not, you know, it's obviously financially great for the translation, but it's also about acknowledging what the industry is like and the fact that this is a sort of, to some extent, a kind of co-creation and needs an awful lot of work. I think that's a kind of big...
That's fantastic.
I do think it's changing, but not awfully quickly.
Yeah, no, and I find myself much more naturally sympathetic to the kind of sort of the sort of media circus of the Man Booker International than the Man Booker, because it just I think it was a really important thing, and it, you know, it came out of the demise of the Independent Foreign Fiction Prize, but it's a sort of because it did used to exist, didn't it? The Man Booker International, it was just sort of it was a lifetime achievement award, a bit like the Nobel. In fact, we haven't actually talked about the Nobel, which is a...
No, we've carefully avoided that. Who wants to talk about the Nobel? Who's ever bought a Bob Dylan album because he won the Nobel Prize? Because it's absolutely bloody pointless, I tell you.
Because it's such a peculiar one, and I feel like it doesn't really get interrogated. The sort of the air of total reverence that people have for it, even people who understand literature, you know, read a lot and understand the kind of the workings of the press and work in the literary industry, that there's something, there's this hallowed idea about the Nobel Prize, and it's nonsense.
Well, it's certainly nonsense when you look at, you know, judging
it's terrible
process
when
itself.
That, I mean, when somebody rings and wins and you've never heard.
And you never, and you know,
and you say that to someone else and they go, really?
Really? But I mean, I'm delighted that, you know, it sort of, you know, has promoted the work of Patrick Modiano or Svetlana Alexievich. You know, that's great. But just the sort of, I think the air of authority it has is essentially bogus.
Well, and we're never going to be judges, are we?
That's the problem.
So you're allowed to say that. You can
really
say that.
Just bitterness.
Well, on that absolutely bitter, entirely Brexit-led note, please could you thank our two speakers, Mr. Toby Lischtig and Ms. Alex Clark, and thank you very much for coming along.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Michael.